The scientists who puzzled over Chad's subsurface worked mainly out of Houston, in the merged upstream division of ExxonMobil charged with buying, developing, and producing oil and gas. After the merger, to reduce headcount and improve flexibility, Raymond oversaw a reorganization that moved many of these scientists into skills groups that could deploy worldwide, like geology special forces teams, to support local business units and projects. Their ability to accurately assess oil reservoirs improved year by year as faster computing and improved graphic and imagery software allowed for more accurate visualization of underground geology than in the past. There was a basic geophysics skills group with obscure-sounding subunits such as the gravity magnetics group. There was a skills group called geological operations that brought scientific expertise to well and pipeline engineering. There were scientists grouped together to work on new field development and mature field development, as well as a group specializing in stratigraphy, a field of geology that studies how complex layers of rocks and sediments, such as those beneath Chad's Doba floodplain, change over time, influenced by water and weather. One of the most important scientific groups based in Houston was called Formation Evaluation. These were the specialists who bought, captured, and analyzed seismic and other data about where undiscovered oil and gas formations might lie on land or beneath ocean floors. As Houston struggled with an economically viable plan to lift Chad's thick, dispersed oil to the surface, its stratigraphers wrestled with geological problems tens of millions of years in the making. Then there was the challenge of transport, even if Chad's oil could be coaxed to the wellhead. There was no profitable market for large volumes in Chad's neighborhood. The oil would have to be piped hundreds of miles overland to the Atlantic Ocean and then shipped to refineries in Europe or the Americas. During the Cold War, despite his torture rooms, Hissein Habre maintained cordial ties with the United States, which regarded him as a regional counter to Libya's leader, Muammar Gaddafi. The Reagan administration trained elements of Habre's notorious security service and provided the regime with tens of millions of dollars of military aid each year. When Habre visited Washington in June 1987, Reagan assured him, "Chad now knows it can count on its friends." The American president took note, too, of Chad's economic problems, particularly its recent locust plagues. Exxon's oil discoveries offered relief from such biblical trials. Bolstered by the Reagan administration's alliance with Habre, Exxon outflanked French oil companies, negotiated with the dictator's aides, and in 1988 produced the Convention for Exploration, Exploitation, and Transportation of Hydrocarbons in Chad. It provided for a 35-year compact among Chad's government, Exxon, and two partners. Exxon would be the lead operator, and by the time production began, the corporation had secured Chevron and Petronas as partners. The terms were favorable to Exxon and its partners in comparison with typical contracts elsewhere. Chad would receive a 12.5% royalty on all oil produced, plus taxes equal to 50% of the consortium's net profits, which could rise to 60% if world oil prices soared. Chad's take of less than two-thirds of revenue after expenses compared to rates closer to 90% in Nigeria. The generous terms were required, the oil companies insisted, to compensate for the exceptional risks they would endure in Chad. No political order in the country was likely to last for 35 years. Exxon's negotiators addressed this conundrum, not just by negotiating for favorable royalties. They also inserted into the 1988 contract what was known in the oil industry as a stability clause. Article 34, entitled Applicable Law and Stability of Conditions, placed the terms of the convention beyond the reach of any Chadian law that might be enacted by any government of the future. The clause protected Exxon against political risk. As in Equatorial Guinea, that risk was daunting. That Exxon had the influence to carve out rights trumping any future law passed by any future Chadian regime was perhaps not surprising in this instance. Exxon's 1988 profits of $5.3 billion exceeded by several times the size of Chad's entire economy. Article 34.3 declared, "During the term of this convention, The state guarantees that no governmental act will be taken in the future without prior agreement between the parties against the consortium, which has the effect either directly or indirectly of increasing the obligations or amounts payable by the consortium, or which adversely affects the rights and economic benefits of the consortium provided by this convention. The language binding Chadians to Exxon's rights and economic benefits was strikingly broad. It could even be interpreted to mean that future governments in N'Djamena might be prevented from broadening civic freedoms or permitting unions to organize if such changes raised the oil consortium's costs. More realistically, the stability clause provided a strong defense against any future Chadian coup makers' inclinations to raise taxes on Doba oil production. The contract was unambiguous about the party's relative sovereignty. In case of contradiction or inconsistency between this convention and the laws and regulations of the Republic of Chad, the provisions of this convention shall prevail unless the parties decide otherwise. When Deby presented the contract to his cabinet for approval, recalled Salibou Garba, then the country's minister for post and telecommunications, the president declared, "You don't have time to read this, and they need it in Houston." Even Deby did not take time to go through it, Garba said. Only later did he realize that the terms were not as favorable as he wanted.